Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Caroline Seymour. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode of How This Is Building Me, host D. Ross Kamage, MD, PhD of the University of Colorado, sits down with Joshua Baumel, MD, Executive Medical Director at the Janssen Pharmaceutical Companies of Johnson & Johnson, to discuss the transition from academia to industry, reasons for the move, expectations for the future, and more.
Hello, this is Ross Kamage from University of Colorado, and I am the host of How This Is Building Me, how we talk about how people's experiences, challenges have given them both opportunities and chances to really grow through their career and life in cancer and cancer medicine. And I'm super excited for my second guest, who's a great friend of mine called Josh Baumel. Josh, would you care to introduce yourself by some of your new and exciting titles, and then we'll dig into what they mean?
My name is Josh Baumel. I am an executive medical director at Janssen Research and Development.
The thing I've always found about pharmaceutical company titles is they always sound like emperor of the world. So could you explain what executive medical director is?
Sure, absolutely. And I, similarly, when I was in academia, it was very difficult to understand what these titles mean and all the different aspects of research. And we'll get to that. But what my job is I am in research and development. So I am helping to develop drugs, to design clinical trials and to run clinical trials. And I oversee a team of physicians as well as other scientists to help execute clinical trials. It's what I do. And the cool part is that's what I was doing when I was in academia as well, a lot of research, but this is on the different side.
When did you transition?
I joined Janssen in the summer of 2021.
In the middle of the pandemic.
That's right.
Did they actually interview in person or was it all virtual?
No, it was all virtual. Everything was virtual. I did a lot of Zoom calls.
For those people listening at home, what you can't tell is that Josh is actually incredibly tall. Were they surprised when they actually met you in person?
Yeah. So actually, at one of the first in-person meetings that I had, which was in ASCO of 2022, where I met a lot of people, the first, second, and third comment that most people made was, "Oh, wow, I didn't realize how tall you were." And what I learned is that apparently I look short on Zoom, which I didn't know.
I didn't know that either. I mean, maybe because I know what size you are normally. I had the same experience, but it was either way. It was either someone who was much taller than you expected or much shorter than expected. You don't want to say those things out loud, but that's what we all experienced.
But apparently I give off, you know, short vibes on Zoom.
Well, I don't know what to say about that. Let's dig into why the transition. Perhaps give a little background in terms of where you were in your academic career when the decision to sort of do something different came upon you.
Yeah, so I had been working as a academic thoracic oncologist at the University of Pennsylvania. I did my fellowship there, and then I was on the faculty for 8 years and had a really wonderful time there. I arrived at Penn having no idea what I wanted to do. I just wanted to help treat patients with cancer and to improve the management for those patients. And I had fantastic mentorship there from Corey Langer and Roger Cohen, who really, you know, sort of took me under their wing and guided me into lung cancer and clinical trial development and trial execution. And I had a lot of exciting opportunities there, participating in industry-sponsored trials, investigator-initiated trials. And I had a great community that I was working with. That was really fantastic. I also had the opportunity while I was at Penn to work with a lot of pharmaceutical companies through advisory boards and other forums, just at ASCO meeting with people. And what I saw was that there was a whole other side to doing research and to bringing new drugs to patients with cancer that I was really not involved in and not participating in. And so when Janssen called, the opportunity was, look, we want to build in lung cancer. We need to have leaders in lung cancer to help guide that strategy. And that to me was really an offer that was too good to refuse. The fact that I was able to join a team of really smart, dedicated people to try to bring new agents to patients with cancer and to really change the way this disease is handled.
I mean, was it just literally a cold call or a cold email, if you can say that? You must have had those before.
Yeah, so I had. So I'd gotten calls before at various companies, but they were talking more about running at the trial level, talking about where you're going to run this one trial, you're going to learn how things work at this company, and you'll be able to grow. And that's a wonderful opportunity. But at Penn, at my role, I was running trials and I was having the ability to design those studies. And that's what really excited me. You know, when we were working together, Ross, about, you know, designing projects, that's what really got me going, that we could change the way this disease is managed by thinking about things and coming up with novel ideas. And so I wanted any job that I took to be one where I could have a role in that strategy component, in that trial design component. And this opportunity was relatively unique in that they were offering that. They said, look, we want to have some support in terms of execution of the trials, but also on the strategy and design. And that's what really excited me, because the scale of what I'm able to do with the team at Janssen is huge. So yeah. I was running, you know, investigator-initiated studies, and it would have a real impact, but we could enroll, you know, 40, 50 people. And yeah. Now I'm helping to run phase three studies of hundreds, thousands of people. And that is really pretty remarkable, and it's very gratifying and rewarding.
It sounds tremendously exciting. I can't remember if I told you this, but I actually spent 18 months in the pharmaceutical industry. And the big change I noticed was, like, my day was filled with meetings. Everything was a meeting. There was lots of, politics is too strong a word, but you kind of had to run election campaigns to get things done. So that's yeah. A different company, a different time. What's it like now?
Well, you know, there are a lot of meetings. That was a big change. I was talking with my youngest son. Something came up at the dinner table, and my wife is also a physician. And one of the kids asked her something. She said, you know, I think dad would be more likely to know that answer, because it was about blood or something in the adult body. And she's a pediatrician. Not that there isn't blood in children's bodies, but you understand what I mean.
Good clarification there.
And my youngest son burst out laughing.
Oh, no.
Burst out laughing. He goes, daddy's not a doctor. All he does is go to meetings.
Oh, my goodness.
And we had this, you know, we spoke and said, you know, daddy's still a doctor, just has a different role. But he doesn't have, because he's little, he doesn't have memory of me seeing patients. It's a big transition. I am on meetings a lot. But I think that there's a couple of differences. The meetings that I have now have a very clear goal in mind. I want to accomplish this. So I need to get these people together to answer this question. When I had meetings in academia, some of the meetings were sort of because we had to have a meeting rather than with a specific goal in mind. And that can be more frustrating. I don't know if that happens at the University of Colorado ever.
Well, no, it did. It also happened in pharma as well. So
yes,
you're having a slightly rose-tinted view so far.
Well, I think that I would say the majority of my meetings are with a specific goal in mind. That's been very helpful.
How many kids have you got?
We have four little boys.
Great. So I hadn't thought about that before, but you're right. There's this kind of like, daddy's a doctor. Has that, I mean, maybe with your youngest, but with the others, has that changed?
They understand, like, you know, they're very clear. I mean, my youngest told me that he thinks I just play Fortnite all day. I've assured him that I don't, but he's quite convinced that that's what's happening. And the older ones understand, you know, I remember I spoke with my oldest son when I was considering the job, and I talked to him about it. And he was like, Dad, this sounds like a really good job. You should take it. And I said, but David, you know, I really like my current job. He goes, yeah, but, you know, you got to grow. You got to try something new.
I love him. He sounds fantastic.
Oh, he's a very insightful kid. But yeah, so I'm very lucky. The ability to have a different work-life balance has been very helpful. You know, my wife also works. We have a lot of responsibilities. I do most of the cooking in our house. Okay. So I make dinner every night. My team knows that around 5 o'clock, Josh's computer is going to close and he's going to go make dinner for his family. And that's okay. And that can be built into my schedule and built into my time. And I was doing, as I mentioned, a lot of consulting work, which is often on the weekends. Now, most of my weekends, I can spend time with my family. And that has been really wonderful to be able to go to my kids' soccer games and things like that.
Was that an unexpected benefit, or was the need to go after that part of the drive for the change?
No. So, you know, it's funny because I had always said, if you said to me, do you work on the weekends? My answer would be no, because I never charted on the weekends. I was very strict with my charting. The moment I left the room, the chart was closed. I had my notes done. Everything was ready. And I have a very good system to get me there. But because I was doing all of this other stuff, that took up those weekend times, and I didn't even think about it. And now it was a really nice benefit that I hadn't even expected to experience, but it's been really, really, really nice.
You mentioned before that you're mostly working from home now. Was that part of the deal, or is that just because of, you know, where Janssen is located relative to your house? Or is that just the norm in pharma now?
So every company is different. There's more interest in coming back to the office and having face-to-face interactions, which has a huge value. At this time, it's a hybrid position. I go in, you know, a couple times a week, but the rest of the time I can work from home. But at the end of the day, I have a global team. I have team members who are on the West Coast. I have team members who are in Asia. I have team members who are in Europe. And so going into the office doesn't necessarily mean that I'll be face to face with my whole team. And so the technology of Zoom and Teams really allows us to work as one.
One of the things that I notice, you know, in the before and the after times is, you know, I used to travel all the time. You know, I'd have like, you know, multiple international trips. We were just used to it. You know, I have two daughters and they would just get used to daddy being away for 4 or 5 days at a time.
Yep.
Now I have this massive activation energy to leave the US and certainly to leave, you know, my office, because, you know, why am I going to spend 2 days traveling somewhere for a 20-minute talk and 2 days traveling back?
I have a similar situation, but I really love traveling. I love seeing the world, and that's something that was very exciting. But I think that I'm more thoughtful now about where and how I go to places. Say, okay, well, if I'm going to go there, am I going to sit on Zoom the whole time? Because if so, there's no reason for me to go there. But is there a benefit to me going there? Is there a value to being physically present in a room with people? Because I think there's a different connection that you can have. Not to say that we're not having a wonderful connection here over Zoom, but there's a different connection that you can have when you're sitting in a room across the table from people.
There's no doubt, though, that if you've already physically met someone, Zoom is a much easier way of forming a connection because you already have one, rather than forming a brand new one where, you know, you with your short stature, you know, on Zoom.
It's difficult because I've got to aim the camera down. It's a whole thing.
You could do like Mussolini did. You could like angle the camera up and it'll make you look like you're 12 feet tall.
No one's ever drawn any connections between myself and Mussolini before. This is the first.
It's early days, you know.
Okay. All right. Well, that's fine.
The two things that I was always been most impressed by you is partly because you're incredibly smart and you think outside of the box, but the other is you're actually a very engaging presenter. And I'm sure that helps in pharma because, you know, you have to get all these people, like you say, you know, this is what we want to do. I believe you told me once, what was your major in at university?
Yes. Very nice of you to say, first of all. And second of all, I was a philosophy and drama double major in college.
Which is obviously why you ended up in, you know, oncology.
That's right. Well, you know, I was actually initially a triple major in philosophy, drama, and biology. Ooh. And then I was accepted to an early admission program at Mount Sinai School of Medicine, which was called the Humanities and Medicine Program. Now it's got a new name. I think it's called FlexMed now. But the principle of it was that the pre-medical requirements in the United States are rather antiquated. And a lot of these pre-med courses, they end up being weed out courses. And the person who's the best physician, the principal of this program is not necessarily the person who does the best in, you know, physics based on magnetism or, you know, organic chemistry. It's about connecting with people and helping a person. That person can be the person who's excelling in the sciences, but it's not limited to that group. And so what this program did was it took 20 to 25 students from the country when I was admitted. And I was accepted in my sophomore year of college, and I didn't have to take orgo, physics, or the MCATs.
Okay.
And then when I got in, I was very excited, and I called and I said, you know, I love biology. Can I still major in biology? And the woman who ran the program said, no, because we're monitoring, we want people to be social science and humanities majors. Why don't you just direct a play when you would have been doing a bio major? So this resulted in two very interesting things. One, I did direct a play, which was very fun.
What was the play?
I did a production of Assassins, which is a musical by Stephen Sondheim. I did my senior honors thesis as a two-person musical by Jason Robert Brown called The Last 5 Years.
Does this mean you can sing, Josh?
I have been known to sing, yes.
Okay.
But it never comes up in my oncology presentations because there's very little musical accompaniment.
I know. There's a gap in the market.
It's really something we got to work on.
Yeah.
But the other thing that happened was that I took in my senior year in college, anatomy and physiology, human physiology, pass fail, just because I thought it was going to be a cool class and I thought it was going to be fun. And everyone else in the class was pre-med and like very focused on. And when I walked up with my pass fail sheet to the professor, he looked at me like I had 10 heads. And I said, no, I think this would be a cool class to take. So I did. And it was a cool class.
Hopefully you passed.
I did pass. I did.
Oh, there we go. That's reassuring. I love the fact that you phrased it that said, you know, I loved my job when I was in academia. I love my new job now. Is there anything that, you know, you'd like more of or less of in either of those jobs if you could go back in the time machine? Although you're currently in the current job, so you didn't have much time in the time machine there.
No, I haven't had much time in the time machine. I think that what I was very lucky about at Penn was the amount of opportunities that I was provided with, both within the clinic as well as in a research standpoint, and opportunities to write trials and opportunities to write grants and work on these complex scientific problems with brilliant people. You know, it's always wonderful to be working with people who are much, much smarter than you are. And so that was such an amazing opportunity. I want more of that. And so now when I'm at Janssen, I'm loving the fact that I get to do that as well. And the cool part is at my new job, the people who I'm talking to have knowledge in areas that I didn't even understand existed, expertise that I didn't even understand existed. And when you are working in academia and research, you're functionally an island to a large extent. You know, you write a grant, and in my experience, you know, you send it around, you get a couple comments, but it's your grant.
Yeah.
You're writing the grant, you're submitting that grant. When I write a document, and I'm working my current job, we get a huge amount of feedback. And the feedback is not on the grammar. The feedback is talking about in depth, this paragraph on this section, I really think we have to frame it this way because of the pharmacokinetic implications or because of the regulatory implications. And all of these elements just aren't things that I had thought about or that I knew anything about. I feel like I'm a sponge and I can just absorb all of this information to the best I can. And that is awesome. So I want more of that. I'm getting it.
I mean, one of the things I loved when I was in pharma was, I mean, you kind of hinted at it there, is like, there's a shared goal. Whereas in academia, it's like, well, what do I want to do? And, you know, maybe I can convince other people. But everybody wants, you know, whatever their little baby is to succeed. Mm-hmm. And so they are all invested in much more, I think, than in academia. The other thing they have is they tend to have good project management. So there's somebody saying, this is going to be done by this date.
Yeah. And it's also highlighting, okay, if it has to be done by this date, going back and saying, okay, what do we have to do by this date to get to there? And like the small steps that lead to the big steps are really critical. And so you're right, project management is absolutely critical.
I gave feedback to our cancer center here and they said, well, could make this place more efficient? And I said, project management. And it was like, well, who's going to pay for that? And
it's like, right.
Dude, you know, this is going to sound like a weird question. But I think for those people who are still practicing physicians, it'll be close to their mind. It's like, how do you say goodbye to your patients when you eventually stepped away?
Yeah, so that was really, really hard. And so what I personally did was I asked for a list of every single one of my patients. And I went through and I called everyone. And I did my best to speak to each one personally, if I could, though it's a little scary to get a voicemail from your oncologist saying, hey, please call me back. So I did my best to talk to each one personally. I tried not to leave voicemails because of the implications thereof, but it was hard. You know, these were people who had put their trust in me, and I was confident that they were being managed by someone who is just as good and going to do a wonderful job in terms of their care. But that was really hard to step away from. But I think that the element that was important was that I could say, look, this is who you're going to go see. I'm confident. My notes were very clear about this is what we've spoken about before. I hope that that helped with the transition, but I'm sure it was hard for the patients as well. That was something that was really, really, really tough.
One of the things I, to some extent, struggled with a little bit in pharma as opposed to academia was in academia, you know, you're a free agent. If a drug sucks, you can walk away from it, move on to something else. Whereas I think in pharma, it is much more like these are your children. You have to do the best you can with their children, whether they're, you know, good or bad and whether they have faults on that day or not. And so, you know, you're in a good company, you've got good products, but I always wonder, you know, at some point in time, you will have a product which is the third best, you know, and, you know, you still have to promote it. Maybe you haven't encountered that yet.
First of all, I think it's a matter of the framing, right? Okay. So it's not, in my view, that I want to make sure my baby or my agent gets the best treatment. The goal of, you know, everyone who's on my team and my personal goal is, you know, we want to eradicate cancer. Yeah. It's the same goal that I had when I was in academia. And so when we have a drug that's in the late development stage, which is what I'm involved in, that means there's been a lot of steps that have been done. We believe in this and we can position it in the place where we think it's most likely to help people. And so the key there is ensuring that the study is designed so it can help the most people. And so my hope is that as I'm designing studies, I can continue along that track. We don't design studies to make, you know, the most commercially viable approach. We make the design the studies so that it helps the most people, bring us closer to eradicating cancer. And as long as I continue doing that, I don't think I'll be in that situation where I have the third best or whatever.
I love it. I love it. Josh, I mean, you're in this new role. It's exciting. You're doing all these transformative things. But how are you going to measure success or failure over the next 2 to 5 years? What are you looking for?
So, you know, I'm focused on the trials that I'm working on, but more importantly, I'm focused on how we're impacting the world. And so I want to continue to be working on transformative trials that are changing the landscape. We can't control the trial results, but we want to design the trial in a way that it's most likely to help people. As those trials read out, we'll work on submissions and then work on ensuring the patients have access to those medicines. And by the way, ensuring access is available starts early. It starts with how we're designing the study. Are we speaking with regulators to make sure that agents have appropriate, equitable access? So these are critical points that are early on. And then also in my new role, I have team members who are reporting to me.
Yeah.
And so being able to mentor and guide their career development is also a critical part of my new job. And I see that as absolutely important to my success. I remember when I first started at Penn, I had a meeting with Corey and he said, look, you know, my success is your success. So I want to support you and get you to where you got to go. And that's the way I see it for my team now. I want to make sure that our programs are working successfully and that my team members are able to shine in the way that I know that they can.
In this new role, do they give you training or mentorship? You're taking some skills you had before, but now you're applying them in a slightly different way. Or is it just kind of like, Josh, good luck. Let me know if there's any issues.
No. So when I arrived, I actually spoke with the team about this and I did have an executive coach for 6 months after I arrived. Once I sort of got my feet under me and understood sort of the lay of the land, it's a fast moving job. It's a lot that's happening. And so having some insight into how I'm coming across, how I can best support people is really critical to guide how I can be successful and how my team can be successful. So one of the things that was very illuminating was we had a 360 degree assessment that my executive coach performed, where she spoke to people who were managing me, people I was managing, people I were in other functions to say, hey, how is working with Josh been? And then reported back to me in an anonymized fashion so that I could figure out where are the areas where I can grow, where are the areas that I'm doing well. And that helps to guide my future. Because my mission and everything that I do, I try to do it as best as possible. And I put in a lot of work and a lot of research to make sure that anything I'm doing is the best possible way to do that. So this affects all parts of my life. It affects the food I eat. You know, I'll research a recipe for hours. It affects where I travel, I'll research trips for hours and days. And it also affects how I do my job. I had my executive coach who I work with. I've read a lot of books on leadership. I'm still trying to grow in that. Yeah. But I think this is a critical element to my career development.
I mean, I think that artificial them and us, I mean, you and I have now been, both of us have been on both sides of that fence. Yeah. So there is much less of a barrier.
Yeah.
But I think academia could learn so much from pharma in terms of making people feel valued, taking them to their best level and supporting them so that, you know, their success is everyone else's success.
Yeah.
So I think you're doing fantastically. You talked a little bit about your work CV, but what about your life CV? Where's that going to go in the next 2 to 5 years? The boys are going to get bigger.
The boys keep getting bigger. They keep demanding food. My children are very, very large. My almost 13-year-old is over 6 feet tall now.
How tall are you, Josh?
I'm 6'6".
Okay. He's got a way to go.
He's got a ways to go. I'm outrageously happy with where my life is. I have a wonderful family. I have a fantastic, you know, wife and kids, and I'm outrageously lucky. I can't really see it getting better. I just want to keep everything going along this path and spending as much time as I can with my family.
I think that's awesome. I have this big smile on my face when I talk to you. Josh, you have been a fantastic second guest. I think you have brought enthusiasm into your transition into this new job, and I'm sure you're going to be hugely successful. I hope we get to check back in with you in a few years' time and just see how things are going, both in terms of your incredibly happy life CV and your work CV.
Thanks so much for having me.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and OncLive SOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.